Okay, and we're ready? We're ready, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, thank you. So I'd like to call to order the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting on Thursday, May 15th. And Nola, I'll let you do the roll call, please.
Sounds good. Chair Akita?
Present.
Member Ron Riley is absent. Member Seacrest?
Here.
Member Tuggle?
Here.
Member Guthrie?
Here.
Member Gibson?
Here.
Member Hageman?
Here.
All right, thank you. So next on the agenda is public comment. Any members of the public here would like to make any public comment that's not on the agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on to the meeting minutes from March 20th. Any comment or changes from the committee about the minutes from the 20th? Hearing none, we'll ask for approval of those minutes.
So moved.
Second.
I have a first and a second. Can we just do it all in favor?
Sounds good to me.
All right. All in favor, say aye.
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 All right.
Aye.
All right. Approved. Now we move on to the operations report, and that is the county.
All right. My name is Nola Engelskerger, Water Utilities Division Manager, the County of San Luis Obispo. I will give the operations report. The first item is the current reservoir level. So the plant is operating 4.7 MGD. State water is off right now. Downstream releases are at 5.2 MGD or 8.0 CFS, cubic feet per second. Elevation of the reservoir is 518.34 feet. The capacity is 92.3%. The storage is 45,660.4 acre feet. Rainfall this year since July 1 has been 15.13 inches, and that is 76% of our average annual rainfall. Are there any questions on those operations?
I'm sure you're going to discuss. Or we're gonna, we're going to have questions about the lawsuit, I think. And did you want to discuss those downstream releases now, how they're being affected by that lawsuit? Or
well, we can scroll down to the projected reservoir levels.
Okay.
You can see that. So I will go to attachment 2 now. All right. So here are the projected reservoir levels for, let me see if I can get that on the screen right there. This includes the current downstream releases that are required by the preliminary injunction. You can see there is a downward trend for our reservoir. Right in the past, there's been some requests for updating our precipitation forecast. So staff is actually looking into that right now. There's been some recommendations, and the precipitation forecast is on the bottom. That's the bars in blue. So we're looking into improving those numbers. So in future reports, you may see that incorporated. But basically, this is the projection of the reservoir elevations. There is an appeal in process and potential settlement, but those are not reflected in this. All you would see is a change in those in that steepness of that line.
I had read, and I should have saved the data source, that we were in a moderate drought category. Has that been issued, or is that just something based on the rainfall that they estimating we're entering? I mean, I'm just curious, has there been any official state release of drought conditions?
I'm not aware of a potential release of drought conditions.
Okay. That was just a...
But, I mean, we can look into it a little bit further.
No, you would know.
It does seem like, yeah.
Yeah, you would know. I'm just curious.
For our local conditions, we're at 70%. So we are below our average rainfall.
Yeah.
But the reservoir is still just from previous wet winters.
Okay, I think this was based on the rainfall and predicted rainfall. Okay, thank you.
I could maybe add a little bit, and I do think it might have been the fact that we're at 75% and we're probably done with rain for this year. So it is going to be a certainly below normal year. Reservoir-wise, Northern California, Oroville, Shasta are above average. The state water deliveries have gone up, started at 30%, 40%. Now we're at 50% of the Table A deliveries for state water. So that's, I guess I would say that's below if we were really flush with water in terms of the snowpack and those types of things. But there's some other factors in there in terms of the timing of the delivery having to do with habitat and some other things. So it's been kind of a funny year. A La Nina year, which is typical to have below normal rainfall.
How about the amount of inflow into the lake? Is there still water? There must be still creek flow. And is that measured?
It's calculated. I don't know what those numbers are right now, but yeah, it is calculated based on the watershed and...
And that's taken in, that all those numbers are taken into account in this projection chart?
Correct. So inflow, evaporation, and then flows downstream into the plant.
Yeah. So back to my original statement about the downstream releases. What is it exactly today, and what would it have been if we didn't have this lawsuit?
Today, the downstream releases are at 8.0 CFS. Mm-hmm. I think historically we have been in the range of 3 to 5 CFS.
Yeah, okay.
Can you say those two numbers again, please?
Right now, the downstream release is at 8.0 CFS. Cubic feet per second. And historically, I believe we typically are releasing between 3 and 5.
That's probably close. And it we usually ramp it up during the summer months.
Correct.
And this lawsuit is actually going to be the opposite? Well, they'll actually ramp it up in the winter.
The idea would be to create migratory flows for fish, and so typically fish are migrating in the winter, so that is when you would expect to see more flows. So they want it to mimic more natural conditions.
Yeah. I think the preliminary injunction is the one that's requiring flows at 8.0.
Correct.
It's cubic feet per second. And that is under appeal by the county up to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, federal court. So we'll see what, how that turns out on the legal side. And then there's negotiations going on between the county and the people that sued the county.
Coastkeepers?
There are three or four but that's the plaintiffs is what I was trying to say. So I don't think the intention is to have, well, maybe it is. I don't know. The 7.9 is like you've noted is pretty high, and that's what's reflected in this projection, correct?
Correct.
The preliminary injunction flows. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, no, this is a big subject, but Nola, you can always shake your head if there's something that you're not supposed to say. I don't want to get you in any trouble. You know, I realize this is a sensitive subject and a lot of lawyers involved. So If there's things you're not supposed to tell us, that's we get it.
Sounds good.
I had a comment question. I think creek restoration is one of the things that the plaintiff wants. Am I right about that?
Yeah, there's a number. There's a number of things, but yes, there's usually with habitat conservation. There's the restoration aspect.
So I'm wondering how can that happen if there are so many private owners along the creek?
Well, we'll be working through that. So the main thing is that we're developing a habitat conservation plan as one part of that preliminary injunction. That habitat conservation plan will outline all of those efforts that you're talking about. And that is due. We're developing that and hoping to submit a draft to the agencies by October 1.
Okay.
So that's a major effort right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Hi, Stacy Inman, Pismo Beach City Council. There is a document called Status Update on Litigation for Lopez, so I figured this would be the right time to ask this question. Maybe.
It is on the agenda.
I couldn't figure out where on the agenda that is.
Item 6. It's part of our budget update.
Okay, item 6. Thank you. I'll talk then.
All right, perfect. Any other comments about the projection chart or questions? All right, hearing none, we'll let you move on.
All right, I'll scroll down to the March and April monthly operations report. These are summaries of the monthly operations for March and April. They're the same that went out originally. There were some changes to the April report that you received electronically, and that's due to changes in how the agencies wanted their surplus water. So a couple of them wanted their surplus water delivered right away, and then the others wanted their surplus water stored. So you'll see those changes on that spreadsheet. Any questions about the operations report? All right, we'll go down to project updates. So we are currently working on a Steelhead Passage feasibility assessment of Lopez Dam. This will be will inform that habitat conservation plan that we're working on and due October 1st. We expect to get the feasibility assessment completed in September, early September, so we'll be able to incorporate the results of that into the habitat conservation plan. Next project is Lopez Dam Flow Sensor. This has been purchased. I think it's in process of being installed. This will help us to measure those pulse flows that will be required as part of our future habitat conservation plan and the preliminary injunction right now. There's a membrane module replacement project. We're developing the contract to purchase those final, the membrane modules for the final two racks. This project has been ongoing, and we've been completing it in phases. So this, hopefully in early July or August, we'll complete the replacement of those final two racks. So spillway assessment and investigation. We have received our geotechnical report from GEI. There's no changes to this project. The geotechnical testing and seismic alternative study on the terminal reservoir. It's been submitted to DSOD for review. We're waiting to hear back on any recommendations they have. No changes to our cathodic protection project. and the fire flow tank replacement project has been on hold. We don't have funding to complete it, but staff is looking into grants that may be available. Any questions on the project?
Just a point of clarification. We have new members up here, and we tend to talk in letters. DSOD.
Division Safety of Dams.
Yeah. State regulatory agency that is basically has jurisdiction over regulation of the dam. So they were heavily involved when the dam improvements were done 20 years ago or so. Yeah, so
they're the regulatory agency that reviews the safety of dams and then makes recommendations to agencies that operate those dams on what is needed to keep them safe.
So that Steelhead Passage feasibility assessment, that budget is to cover the assessment or the feasibility, or is that the budget to actually create Steelhead Passage?
It is the budget to assess the feasibility of alternatives to create that passage. So they'll review those alternatives, look at the technical feasibility of getting passage, volitional passage over the dam. And volitional means that fish is free and willing to go over the dam by itself. So it could be fish ladders and different alternatives like that. And so this report will review the technical feasibility of that, the costs of those projects, and then provide a recommendation at the end on what is feasible for our dam.
Okay. Any other questions about those projects? All right, moving on.
All right, there was a request for us to look through our fire protection of our facilities. We recently did this as part of an effort when we were meeting with our bond rating company, and they had the same questions on what are we doing to protect our facilities. And so the nature of our facilities, they're pipes, they're underground, they're metal tanks, and they're surrounded by clear spaces, and we perform regular vegetation management all around them. And so our assessment was that we have less fire risk because of the nature of the construction of our facilities. Our water treatment plant has metal buildings. It's surrounded by, you know, asphalt and clear spaces so that we can access our facilities. Most of our infrastructure is underground. Those storage facilities are steel tanks. And there's clear spaces that are maintained to keep vegetation clear of them. So that we're not moving forward on any fire protection risk improvement projects, but I can answer any questions you have further on that subject. All right, then we will move on to the last item on our operations report on unbudgeted operations costs.
Good morning. I'm Katie Franco. I'm the Finance Division Manager at Public Works for the county. We wanted to include this memo in your packet and for the Technical Advisory Committee as well, because we know these costs are significant and we did not plan for them. So basically, the cost incurred to date for the legal defense for the litigation is up to $1.7 million. We did move the cloud seeding budget down for this effort, but it was only $448,000. So right now, the net unbudgeted impact is up to $1.3 million, and you can kind of see the the burn rate for each invoice that we're receiving from the legal team. So we're projecting that that could get up to $2 million by the end of this fiscal year. And just for your information, the impacts to each agency based on contract entitlement is down below there. Previous situations that we've been dealing with, legal defense, we've included this cost. Just for your information, we continue to update it so that you're aware of the cost incurred and the status of how many invoices we paid to date, if it's useful. And if you have any questions.
So you're saying $2 million by the end of the year, and that's just for the lawsuit, the attorneys and whatever?
Correct. That's just our attorneys.
Yeah, yes. Right. So there's no inclusion of restoration projects or studies or whatever?
I'll let Nola take that.
Yeah.
I turned that off. I think that's what's outlined on this memo is these are all our litigation costs to our attorneys.
I will say there's a staff component in there. It's mostly David Spiegel's time because Kate Ballantyne is also included in a lot of work, and she's not coding her time there. It's just David, which he would be budgeted in this operating budget anyway. So his time would be funded elsewhere if he wasn't working on this.
Okay, thank you.
A question, I think, for... What's it?
Nola,
sorry. We had voted last year to fund one of the restoration projects. Is that been defunded, or I'm just wondering what the status was of that, because that was, I think it's connected. Well, I know it's connected, but is that been just neutralized until this is taken care of? Because one of the questions was, is that include the funding for the one of the projects? And I believe
you're talking about the AG stream gauge modification project. And so, yes, Zone 3 did fund a portion of that project. That project was performed by another agency. It was performed by Creeklands, I believe. And they partnered with the Zone 3 and I believe maybe the city of AG to do some of that work. And that work was completed. Those efforts do improve the habitat in AG Creek. I'm hoping that Zone 3 will get some credit for that, and we will definitely be talking about those efforts and previous efforts that we've done in the watershed, but it's done, yeah.
Brad, go ahead. I think you had a question or comment.
And maybe to Katie. So two things, I guess. I know the agencies have requested that the litigation fees be billed separately or separate line items however that's going to end up being invoiced. And what's the timing of that as far as invoicing goes?
So I'm Christina Borges. I'm your accountant in our finance department for Public Works. And this question was also brought up at the TAC meeting yesterday.
I'll bet it was.
and so what we've decided to do, one with the 25-26 fiscal year budget billing that goes out, which is biannual. The first one will be out in July, second one in November. We will have a separate line to show what's being budgeted specifically towards the litigation effort, since some of this will be going into the next fiscal year. With the current year litigation costs, that will be in your true-up billing, which comes out in November, and that will also have its own separate line to show you what that cost is for your agency specifically. So we will be separating it out, unlike what we normally do with like routine ops, capital outlay, or the non-routine. It will be a separated item for you guys.
And so Nossman's getting paid, I presume.
Yes.
Is the county, and fronting that, so to speak, out of their red ink that they have? No, out of reserves, or district reserves? I mean, what's the cash flow like, and is there any concern, I guess, in terms of that? Yeah.
There is an amount of reserves that we have in our bank account that we're cash flowing,
cash, I guess. Flowing,
but
out.
On budget, it's just we're overspending on this line item.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, so.
Yeah. So it will be billed out as, you know, a receivable in the fall.
And then hit the true up, yeah. Basically. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thanks. Just timing-wise, I think, for council members and agencies in terms of, you know, they're going to see this, they can anticipate that. And there's lots of discussion going on about that, as you're aware. But
I know we worked with your agencies to develop the 25-26 budget. We decided to use some reserves towards litigation costs. That's also an option that we could take at the year-end close, depending on direction from the agencies and how they want to fund this work. I know it's a significant cost to AG. So we'll look to you guys, and we can make a recommendation closer to the end of the year, after the year closes even, after we've gotten all the invoices through June.
So while you're still up there, what about all the time and effort from the legal team from the county? How's that get billed?
So our county council's office is funded through the general fund, and it's a component of, like, countywide overhead is basically how we fund our support departments. So it's not getting charged directly to Lopez right now.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Hi, so I have a question along this as well. On the breakdown by agency, I see all the agencies. I don't know what the acronym CSA-12 means. County service area. Okay.
Avila Beach is maybe the biggest water user in CSA 12, but that also includes who else? Some county facilities. I remember the trailer park, different contracts in there. I think Avila Beach share, well, 68 acre feet. So, I mean, I don't know if we can work backwards from that, but I think we end up being about 2%. So we're a little bit the tail wagging the dog at Avila Beach, but we're also super sensitive to the other agencies.
So part of my concern is it not true that the county owns Lake Lopez? Yes? And the water line and things of that nature?
The flood control district, yes, is the manager, operator, and manager of the reservoir, the dam, and the treatment plant.
Okay. So so I'd like to know why all the city and other agencies, like Avila and Oceano, why 100% of that is going to all of those providers and not some of this money being paid by the County of San Luis Obispo. So that is my concern as a citizen, but also a city council member, that it's clear to me that the county holds responsibility as well, and not just all of the cities and the districts. And as we heard, this is going up to $2 million, and it is probably going to go past that. I'm a lawyer by trade. And, you know, litigation to the Ninth Circuit takes a long time. It's not going to show up, you know, in 2 months. It maybe you'll get, I don't know, maybe next spring, summer, probably a year from now. So I'm highly concerned with the way that the breakdown by agency is for all of those agencies. I think the county should take more responsibility.
All righty. Thank you. Thank you for stating your opinion. We'll put that in the minutes, I would imagine. So it would go to David, and then from David on to his, I'm not sure where it would go from there, the Board of Supervisors maybe, but we'll find out.
Yeah, so the Lopez project is, you know, consists of the dam, the treatment plant, the pipeline, and all of the funding has historically for operation and maintenance of those facilities has come, is the cost share is identified in the water supply agreements that are associated with the Lopez project. So that's the only way I can answer that right now.
Yeah, I guess as a citizen and, you know, I live in Arroyo Grande, I guess everybody else probably has the same concerns that who's going to pay for this eventually. I think the water users, which is everybody who lives in the Pismo, AG, Grover, Oceano, or some this money's going to have to come from somewhere. I know Arroyo Grande's not flush with cash. I know this. That's concerning. I get it. You know, we are all in the same boat, and the boat is sinking at the moment. So it's a real bummer. This whole thing is going to cost. They're going to have to raise the rates. That's all I can see. And that's just me, I'm just a total layperson when it comes to those type of decisions. But yeah, somewhere along the line, someone's going to have to pay for all this litigation.
Well, and beyond the litigation, there'll be other fees and costs. So, yeah, it's.
Katie, do you have a comment or question?
You. So as a member of the Arroyo Grande City Council, of course, I agree. And I don't, you know, these small towns being made responsible for obviously huge amounts. So that fee is for a law firm they picked, and it's part of a year, if I understand correctly. So I'm also an attorney, and I know somewhat how these, I don't do civil, but anyway, the point is I do agree with the speaker that this isn't going to be resolved quickly. So I could see over $1 million a year being billed to Arroyo Grande, and that's just, I mean, it's everything he just said. So I guess we'll see what happens.
All right, Nola, next on the agenda.
Before we leave the operations report, there was no questions about the boil water notice. So I don't know if it...
because I think we were also traumatized.
But I thought it might be.
Just not have water?
I was just trying to figure out where it would go.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't really in there as a direct line item, but I'm sure it was going to come up in the member comments at the end. So if you'd like to
break
it down, go for it.
All right. Yeah. So just to sum that up, everybody's aware we had the boil water notice after we received some positive tests and detections of bacteria in the Lopez distribution pipeline. Resulted in a boil water notice for the Five Cities area and resulted in a citation to the Lopez project. So we had a full inspection was conducted on May 2nd with the Division of Drinking Water. They have reviewed the results of that and provided a report to us. And inside that report, there are four corrective action items, mostly involved with replacing our aging sample stations. So some of our sample stations looked like they had some corrosion on the caps and the lids. So we'll be replacing those caps. Some of the blow-offs and air vacs, those are above-ground facilities, look like they were also had rusted lids, so they want those replaced. So we'll be replacing all of those older all of those older facilities as well. They would like to see a plan and a timeline for when those will be replaced. Our response is due to them by May 30th, so staff is working on that right now. We're counting up those sample stations, counting out the blow-offs that need to be replaced. And there's a fourth one. They would like us to increase our routine inspections of the water system because they found a homeless camp near one of the blow-offs. So we'll be maybe cleaning up that area and then developing a long-term maintenance plan for the transmission line since it's 50 years old. So that may, some of that maintenance is like what's going on right now would be that free chlorine burn. We do that once a year. Maybe we'll be increasing that to more frequently. Maybe we'll be planning other projects like we've done pigging projects in the past on sections of the line. So some of these things we need to talk about and figure out, like, what are we going to put in this maintenance plan? And so we'll be working on that over the next couple weeks. I told your technical teams at the TAC yesterday that we'll be putting together that plan and timeline and submitting it to them so that they can see it along with those costs for that before we submit it to Division of Drinking Water.
So in summary, the reason wasn't pinpointed, but more than likely one of these items that were listed. Is that, am I assuming that's the direct, that's kind of what they were trying to say, that they can't really say for sure, but.
They found these items and they identified them as corrective actions. And so even though Division of Drinking Water believes that these are the cause. And so we are going to actively pursue these corrective actions, and we hope that that also solves the issue.
The required maintenance, would it fall within the current budget of maintenance, or is it possible it's going to be additional unbudgeted money that we will need to spend to rectify the recommendations?
So some of these replacements need to happen immediately, and they were not budgeted. So you're correct. We're also going to be working on a more thorough financial plan so that we can share that with your TAC and you when we know more.
Is there a penalty involved?
There is not. I did not see that. So maybe if I don't respond by May 30th, but we plan on responding by May 30th.
Okay. Just curious.
Can you just tell us again about the lines? I didn't catch whether you said there were lines that need repairing or replacing.
So what it is we have sampling stations. So these are above ground, and there's like, that's where we found, you know, we sample our pipeline. There's 13 of them. Some of them have already been replaced, so that's why we need to count out which ones are older. I just don't have that number at my fingertips right now, but our operations team is working on that right now to identify how many of those. So, and then we need to upgrade some aging air vacuum release assemblies. So those are also some above ground facilities. I guess they noticed they looked rusted and maybe sunken in the ground a little bit, and so they want them to look refreshed. So we're going to upgrade those too.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Brad.
Thank you, Art. So, and all of the county also looked at the lab procedures, sampling procedures. I know that was done. I mean, they're, in my way of thinking, again, just being in the water operations for 30, 40 years, it's possible that it was a false positive. It's, you know, to get repeatable, that sort of takes that away a little bit. But the other, I think, important note is the cities and the districts sample their distribution systems, and none of us had any positives. So, I mean, it's not to say that it wasn't there, but it wasn't ubiquitous through the distribution system. I think that's a pretty safe statement. And we have to be regulatory, and as water purveyors, we have to be super conservative. So it was a lot ado about something, but that's something I guess I'm not quite sure of. And it's first time it's ever happened. In my experience, you know, Lopez Line and some of the other municipalities I've worked with haven't had this type of an incident before. So there is, I guess in some ways it'd be nice if there was a smoking gun that said, oh, this is it, you know, we found something. But it does cause a fresh set of eyes from the regulators to take a look at it, and for county staff as well. So again, if we're trying to maybe make some lemonade out of some lemons, but I think that is, the bad news is we don't have money for it, but we'll figure that out too.
Correct. All of that is correct. So that assessment involved a lot of pre-work before Division of Drinking Water was on site. Our staff walked all the pipelines, they droned facilities, checked all the vents, they did integrity tests on the membranes at the treatment plant. They went through every single one of those membranes that they were replacing. I was out there and I watched them routinely stick their head in that clear well tank, putting flashlights and mirrors, trying to look for anything that they could see that could have gotten into the tank. It was very thorough. Us auditing our own processes all the way through the plant, around the reservoirs, checking our perimeter channels. Our lab did the same thing. They reviewed all of their protocols, audited their procedures, figured out like what could have possibly happened. We checked our bottles because we were like, maybe there was a bad lot of bottles, but they all came from different lots. And then, you know, we just couldn't find anything. Really put our head down and tried really hard. But this is after this inspection, this is what Division of Drinking Water saw. And they went out there with a magnifying glass. They were looking for something. So we'll have to do some replacement on some old facilities. In the end, the Lopez project will be better. So
there was a statement made at the TAC meeting that none of the drinking water that was tested in any of the cities came back with high TC. Is that a correct statement that we can get out to the public?
That's correct, and that was included in all of our press releases as well. You know, some of the cities were able to isolate immediately, and then they performed their testing, which is why they could come on, lift that boil water notice earlier on Friday, whereas the groups that had to stay on the Lopez line could not until we cleared our test results, which was Saturday, the following day.
Okay, thank you.
Does the state also, are they involved with that process to lift and to place the?
They were, so they have to review all the results. We had to submit the results to them after we got the confirmation of the total coliform, that with the first initial hit of the E. coli, mm-hmm. that triggered the boil water notice. They received those results. It was a requirement for us to issue the boil water notice to the communities, to the participants. And then same process, we had to submit all the test results to the Division of Drinking Water. They had to review them and clear us for lifting that boil water notice.
In Oceano, we never tested positive, but we switched immediately to groundwater. And I know for the second test, I think one of our guys drove to Lompoc to deliver the sample, trying to get it done faster. So,
okay, Nola, moving on to the Lopez Recreation Report.
Hello, my name is Brian Wilder. I'm Park Superintendent with Slo County Parks, and I understand this report's been on hiatus for a while, so I'm happy to be here today. I'll start with the activities, recent activities, that is, at Lopez Lake. We had a trout plant on April 16th. It was 2,400 pounds, rainbow trout as usual. There were three bass tournaments held over the course of March and April. And in early March, we had a triathlon event that's hosted through Cal Poly and Slo County Parks. It's an annual event, heavily attended, and it's been there for many years. Some of our recreational use entry counts, total individual camping nights, which is basically campsites occupied, is 2,147 for March. Total vehicle day use counts, 2,252. And total people count, 15,021. And again, those are for March. Those are the latest numbers that we have available. our Quagga inspection program. We're in year two of a Department of Boating and Waterways grant. We use a vendor called Muscle Dogs. They bring out canines that are trained to sniff out for matter related to invasive mussels. It's worked great last year. They were there all summer. It's a great educational tool. People love to come and see the dogs work, so it's worked really well. So they just started this about 2 weeks ago. They're going to be on site for the next 2 weeks or whole summer. Basically, the grant pays for an inspector to be on site 7 days per week and the use of dogs on weekends through our busiest months, which obviously are in the summer. Some coordination we've had recently with Fish and Wildlife. They also have a canine that's able to sniff out matter related to invasive mussels. They come out kind of whenever they want to. I would say on average, they're probably out about once or twice a week. So it's been very helpful. A lot of times they'll have their canine down at the launch ramp as the people leave. It's another great educational tool. So I feel like the boaters at Lopez are really getting the full gamut of education on invasive mussels. So it's worked out really well. Our recent development with Fish and Wildlife was a protocol development for a positive canine ID. We haven't had one, but it kind of raised the question, if we did, who do we contact and what do we do? So we worked with Public Works Water Quality, and they're kind of working out a protocol of phone numbers to call, who to notify, and what the next steps are. Again, just a preventative step that we're taking. And that's about all I have to share, unless you have any questions.
Yeah, where are the mussels?
So we don't.
And what do the dogs do?
We don't currently have any mussels.
Oh, okay.
And that's our goal, is to not have mussels. So we started our program in 2008. There's been some development in our inspection protocols during that time, obviously. It's one thing that we've done very well. We take very seriously. And the muscle dogs is just another layer of what we've already been doing with visual inspections. Basically, any boat that comes in that's either has a lot of dirty organic matter or water anywhere in the boat is not allowed into the facility.
Okay. Just curious. Thank you.
Yeah, that was a question I had was, I know up at Nacimiento, same thing, Monterey County does the inspection, and then they'll tag your boat so that you can come in and out. And then do you have any procedures for if you get a positive or something that looks susceptible to, in terms of bleach or hot water, you know, something that'll zap the mussels?
Yeah.
Ready for folks to use, or you just send them home?
Well, initially we send them home. They go into a database that basically tracks where each individual boat has been within the state. So there's no doubt that we know where they came from last. Essentially, the vessel has to be clean and dry. So if they bring it back the following day and it's clean and dry, it passes our inspection. I think at this day and age where we've been doing these inspections for so long that most of the people at Lopez are used to the whole thing. So they know if they go out of the area that they're going to be subject to an intense inspection. Our regular users, they get a clear tag. So when they leave the facility, they get a clear tag that attaches their boat to their trailer. If they come back and that's still attached, we know they haven't been anywhere else. So
I think that's similar to what Monterey County does with NAS and San Antonio.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And it's, I mean, speaking of poor things for water systems that we depend on, these guys can really have some very negative impacts. So I appreciate the effort.
Of course.
You guys are doing.
Go ahead. Question.
Are kayaks under the same umbrella? I'm just curious because I have friends that kayak all over. And then they go, you know, and they also kayak in Lake Lopez. I'm assuming that's not an issue. Kayaks aren't an issue because we don't, you know, it's launched from the shore.
Yeah, they are inspected just like any other vessel. But, you know, there's a lot less hidden compartments in a kayak. So it's a little bit easier to inspect. There is occasionally there will be a kayak that has a port that water got into on the inside of the shell. And those people are not allowed in unless it's clean and dry. So there can't be any water anywhere in the vessel.
By this question, you know that I haven't been to Lopez in a little bit, but is the bridge done, project?
It is close to wrapping up. I know that's been a long time coming. I don't have the exact dates and when they expect it to be fully open, but I've been told that they're hoping to wrap the project up within the next month or two.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, Nola, we're on the budget status.
Okay, so third quarter budget update. Essentially, it's probably easiest just look at these graphs. Routine operation and maintenance is tracking with the actual costs are tracking with the budgeted. The non-routine operation and maintenance costs, this reflects the increase in litigation costs. So you'll see that the actual is a large gap above the budgeted expenses. And then capital outlay, right now our actual is below our budgeted. That's because we still plan to complete that membrane replacement project. Once we do that, it'll be tracking with the budgeted costs. Any questions on the third quarter update?
Well, hearing none, I guess we can move on to the item 7, the declaration of surplus water.
Yeah, so on the screen now is the summary of our surplus water available. The top table shows, let's see here, hold on, let me get my notes. All right, so the stored water, which is unused entitlement, and then the second table shows the surplus water generated, which is unused downstream releases, and the declaration of surplus water available would be the 930.4 acre feet of water. The last table shows a summary of how much surplus water is available to each agency, and that last column is how much that surplus water cost would be to each agency. And right now, every agency is requesting that surplus water be delivered or stored.
So what you're looking for from us is a...
an approval of this surplus water amount. I guess that's the declaration. It doesn't need to go to the board anymore if the Zone 3 agencies endorse this or approve this surplus water amount, then it can be made available through the year according to your contracts.
So you'd be looking for a motion to approve?
Yes.
Formal action. And this was no doubt presented at the TAC yesterday. I missed the TAC yesterday.
I missed the TAC. Oh, well, I was listening. I couldn't. I was listening in.
I was there, too. Yes, I believe it was.
Yeah. Rosemary was probably on.
Rosemary.
Hi, thank you, Rosemary. Rosemary Gaglione, City of Pismo Beach. There was some adjustment that was going to be made in the stored water next month. I got a call that there were a couple of numbers that weren't tallied that will show up and true up next month.
That is correct. Okay. And I think some of those numbers were reflected in the April report, which is why it was adjusted for this meeting, because it shows, well, at least it shows that City of AG wanted to use some surplus water this month, and Oceano wanted to store their surplus water, at least in April. And then whatever requests were made would be
reflected
in the next.
Right, because my understanding was that 31.2 acre feet of stored water was not the correct amount, or that it's this month, but then that's going to be recalculated next month?
Yes, okay. And I think it gets tricky because we're at the end of the water year, have to declare the amount. A lot of the agencies immediately, it all goes to storage, and then all the requests for either being delivered or staying storage happen now.
All right, thank you.
So this is the amended report for this month, but there might be another change, calculations next month. Is that what you said? Did I hear that right?
I think Rosemary is referring to operationally, where when the water gets used, stored, and delivered, that will be reflected in that operations report.
But the surplus
amount before you right now is correct.
Here's one that you probably can't answer. I can't answer it. Looking at CSA 12, entitlement is shown as 5% for the bottom table there. But looking at the costs when we were back on Katie's memo, Katie Franco's memo, it says CSA 12 is 7.44%. Are there some CSA 12 people that aren't entitled to surplus water? You think that's a difference? And this is why is it 5 and not, and the, that one was 7.44?
I don't know.
I don't either. You got a snappy answer there, accounting team? Yeah.
I know David was asking me about the acre feet cost based on like what budget was for this year. Obviously, we're not going to know what that true cost per acre foot is until we do true up. But I remember when I was working on true up CSA 12, because it has a lot of contractors just within CSA 12 that we bill out to. If I remember correctly on the Excel sheets, I don't think every contractor does get stored water. They aren't, not everybody is requesting it, but there are those out there that do, that usually are the ones that have more acre footage within the CSA 12. So that's probably what would make up that difference on the percent.
That was the only thing that came to my mind. It's the first time I've seen it. When we've talked about back to litigation costs, the county has said they're in for 5% because of the CSA 12, which shows up here, but it was 7.4 here. So I'm more comfortable with the 7.44% of the county paying on litigation. In fact, if you want to make it 17 or 24%, that's fine as well. But no, all joking aside, it's just a little difference there that I've never seen before. So I don't think we should delay our action here, but. Thank you. And you guys maybe check into that.
Just looking at the table, almost looks like it's like a rounding thing, too.
Oh, that could be. Oh, because everybody else is going to round it down.
Yeah, we went to like 51. The.
Oh, was it 50.55? Yeah.
I rounded up. Yeah, and then took away from.
17.6.
Do you want to take more questions and comments, or do we want to make a motion in a second? Probably should have done that first, but We don't have one yet. So does anyone want to make a motion to
approve? I move.
Second.
All right, any other comments? I had actually had a comment that these surplus water generated, that 930 acre feet, will probably be zero next year?
Most likely. You know, we didn't start the preliminary injunction flows, I think, until January, towards the end, December, January.
Okay. Thank you. That was just I thought that was the case, but I was hoping it wasn't. Anyone else have any other comments or questions? No, I think we probably should do a roll call vote on this. What is your thoughts?
All right, a roll call vote. Chair Ikeda?
Aye.
Member Sikra?
Yes. Yes. Sorry, yes.
Member Tuggle?
Yes.
Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Member Gibson?
Yes.
And Member Hageman?
Yes.
All right. Passed unanimously. On item 8, is there actually an item 8?
There are no action items that need to go to the board.
Okay. About future agenda items, is this more of a question for us?
Correct. If you want anything added to the agenda, we will add that for next time.
With all that's going on, the agenda's longer than it normally is. So unless someone has something that is of importance, go for it. I mean, we can add it to the agenda if anybody has something. No? All right, hearing none. How about any other committee comments from anyone? No? All right, I think we're good, Nola. Yeah, unless you have something.
Nope, that's it. I guess we would just say our next meeting is July 17th at the Oceano Community Service District. And you know where to reach us if you have any questions.
Okay, meeting adjourned. Thank you.